Chapter 17.
Before I could fully process what had just happened, the ace grabbed me again, and I spun around to face him. In front of my eyes, the creepy bastard's torso began to bulge in an unnatural manner. Then, to my utter disgust and awe, two more arms grew from the thing's sides. What the fuck? I stared as the grotesque scene before me finalized, but then I prepared myself for the fight of my life. Fortunately, I had the metal skin effects still in play, so I wasn't worried about taking any damage just yet. Once the potion began to wear off would be another story, but for the moment, I focused on dealing as much damage as I could. I gripped my long, curved sword in my right hand, and I grabbed one of my many daggers with the other. Then I circled around the ace as I waited for the minion to make the first move. But I didn't have to wait very long. The ace charged and twirled his four swords like a tornado of blades, and if it wasn't for the effects of the metal skin potion, I would have been cut to ribbons from the first attack. My opponent seemed surprised when his blades bounced off my skin, and he took a step back to scan me over for an instant, but it was all the opening I needed to lunge forward and slice my blade across his stomach. The cut was shallow, but inky black blood seeped out from the wound and dripped down the ace's waist. "What else you got?" I taunted, as I flipped my sword around in my fist. The ace growled, before he launched himself across the distance between us. I managed to step to the side, and I only caught a glancing blow on my metal-covered shoulder. But the impact still sent a shockwave through my arm. I nearly dropped my sword, but I clenched my fist just enough to keep my grip on the hilt. But then I stabbed sideways with the dagger in my left hand. My blade hooked him under the arm, and a little more blood spilled to the paving stones beneath our feet. These tiny wounds weren't doing me any good, though, so I decided to kick it up a notch. I couldn't be injured by his weapons no matter how fast he could spin them, so I stepped in close and took the brunt of his attack on my neck and shoulders. Then I buried my dagger in his chest while simultaneously cutting upward against his lower left arm with my sword. The blade severed his limb, and his fourth weapon fell uselessly to the ground. One down, three to go. At least you won't have any aces up that sleeve, I quipped as I stepped out of the reach of his blades once more, and I couldn't help but laugh at my own humor. Funny, right? The ace didn't give me any signs of comprehension, but I didn't care. The joke was more for me than him anyway, no matter how corny it was. We danced back and forth without either one of us dealing a major blow for several breaths. But then I got the opportunity to step inside the ace's reach once more, and I made sure to twist my dagger as I shoved it into his stomach. Then I swiped up with my sword on his other left arm, and the open wound sprayed black blood in my face. The ace fell to one knee, but still he didn't cry out in pain, and I had to wonder if they were even really alive. Maybe they were nothing more than magically animated cards, but the humanoid body definitely gave me pause. Not enough to keep me from killing the bastard, though. My dagger was soaked with black ichor when I finally wrenched it free from the ace's gut, but I didn't care. I immediately stabbed a second time, and then a third, until my enemy's torso resembled a cheese grater more so than flesh. I kept stabbing until the ace fell backward with a guttural groan, and even then I placed a few more cuts across his throat to puncture the bag of ink beneath the layer of flesh-like covering. Even with arms on only one side of his body and not the other, he'd been an intimidating foe, and I was glad the fight was nearly finished. All that remained was to sever his head to ensure I'd dealt a fatal blow. But then what? My thoughts wandered as I sawed through the ink bag of his neck, and I thought about what lay on the other side of this massive locked wooden door. The King's Road led directly to it, so it had to be another territory of darkness beyond, but there was no way to know for sure until I saw it for myself. I just had to figure out how to open the damn door. In the meantime, my army was left to its own devices at the former Clover Queen's fortress, but I was confident everything was going well on that end. We'd already achieved the hardest part of our victory when I'd left to chase after the Queen, so the battle had to be over by now. There was only one way to find out. I yanked the ace's hooded head free from its body, and the rest of its blood began to pour from the gaping hole in its neck. Then I tossed the head to the side of the road, and I flicked my hands rapidly to shed the inky blood from off my palms. I paced in front of the massive locked door for a while longer, as I scanned the face of the wall for any imperfections. The black wall, as Edie had called it, was so tall it nearly blocked out the light of the sun when I stood against the foundation. I yanked on the door handle again, but once more nothing happened, so I punched the portal with my steel-hardened fists. The wood vibrated from the impact, but a shockwave launched me backward, and when I regained my footing, the door remained undamaged. Then, as I stood staring at it, the portal began to vanish into the solid black wall, and a moment later, there was no sign the portal had ever been there in the first place. It seemed as though the door could only be opened with a key like the Queen of Clovers had used. "Ah, fucking wall!" I cursed, as I punched the surface a few more times for good measure, but I wasn't expecting much. The imposing structure remained unchanged from my efforts, and I decided I'd done what I could for now, and would have to come back with some more ideas later on. The Frisian and Zidi waited silently behind the carriage, but my eyes turned to the team of horse-like creatures pulling the large vehicle. They deserved their freedom, so I moved to cut the lashes, securing them to their yoke. As soon as they realized they were free, the team of Frisians nickered and galloped all around us in a wide circle. My companion mount echoed their calls, and I had a feeling it was urging them to come back with us. But the newly freed Frisians took off toward the south and were soon out of sight.
"Fotuk says they will rejoin the herd later,"
Zidi informed me in an apologetic tone. "It's all right," I said as I caressed the top of the fur bay's head with my cleanest finger. "They need the time to recuperate from their ordeal."
"The queen got away,"
Zidi said more so than asked. "She did," I frowned. "What do you know about the other side of the wall?"
"Nothing."
Zidi shook her entire body from side to side.
"I've only heard of the wall in stories, but I've never seen it with my own eyes before."
"I guess we'll just have to figure it out later. For now, let's get back to the former Clover Queen's fortress to see how things are going. We'll leave the carriage here, but we might have use for it later, so make a note of its location."
"Yes, Alex,"
Zidi squeaked, and she glanced around at the King's Road.
"It took us less than an hour to get here at full speed."
"We won't be in as much of a hurry going back," I promised, as I climbed up onto the Frisian's back behind the fur bay, and the horse-like creature turned back to the west. My metallic skin faded back into normal flesh as we cantered gently down the King's Road. But I heard cheering before I even saw my forces lining up around the outside of the castle. Everyone had come out to greet me, and they shook their weapons in the air as they shouted at the tops of their lungs.
"Dreamer! Dreamer! Dreamer!"
I waved like a king on parade as we trotted across the semi-broken drawbridge, and then I spotted Una and May standing in the courtyard. So I quickly swung my leg over the Frisian's mane and hopped to the ground before it had come to a halt. I ran the rest of the distance to my lovers, and the two women rushed into my embrace.
"Oh, Alex, you came back!"
Una sobbed as she buried her face in my ichor-covered neck.
"Oh, I was thinking the worst, I admit. I allowed my heart to hold doubt."
"It's all right. We all get worried every once in a while, but you should know better by now. I always come back."
"And victorious, it would seem,"
May murmured, as she rapidly blinked her eyelashes over her light blue eyes. "To a degree," I gritted my teeth. "The Queen of Clovers has escaped me, for now."
"As you see, for now,"
May replied, and her eyes twinkled as she smiled.
"You are not one to be easily dismayed."
"Right? But it's usually called stubbornness."
"A fine quality in a leader,"
the Dodo woman assured me. But then, without another word, she claimed my mouth in a kiss. Una waited patiently for the kiss to end, and then she tilted my head toward her with her pointer finger, before seizing my lips with her own. The mixed tastes of the two women danced on my tongue, and I groaned with pleasure. Being the dreamer was fucking awesome.
"Would you like to tour the spoils of your victory?"
May asked, as she gestured toward the door into the castle. "I'd love to," I said, and I took each of their hands in mine. "Show me what you got, babes."
"I will never understand the term, babe,"
May said, with a confused shake of her head.
"I am a grown woman."
"It just means I feel protective and stuff," I explained, and shrugged. "It's a way of saying you're mine."
"We most certainly are yours,"
Una purred, as she squeezed my hand warmly. We crossed the distance to the thick wooden door, but there were no signs of any enemies anywhere. There was still spilled black blood, as well as some spots where red was mixed in, and the signs of wounded animal people twisted my stomach. Still, my army was in good spirits, and we'd won the castle. No longer was it the Clover Queen's fortress. We'd have to come up with a new name after we cleaned out any signs of its former inhabitants, but then my mind turned to the other side of the wall. That was a problem for tomorrow, but it still itched at me.
This is the audience chamber,
Una informed me, as she indicated a grand room with vaulted ceilings. Everything was black, and it reminded me of an emo teenager's bedroom. The chair at the far end of the throne room was upholstered in rich black velvet, and the curtains covering the windows appeared to be made from the same fabric. The carpets were thick and lush, but darker than the shadows of night, and I wondered how hard they would be to vacuum. Were the Clover Cards also servants? Seems like it would take a lot of people to operate something on this scale.
The queen had slaves. We have freed them all, and many have already expressed an interest in vengeance. Our quest to defeat the queen has ended with even more recruits joining our side.
Awesome, I nodded, as I turned away from the throne room and continued on down the hallway. May and Una showed me to richly decorated chambers, a large library, an alchemy tower full of half-filled potion bottles, and, of course, the dungeons. It was bigger than it appeared from the outside, and my legs were already screaming for a break by the time we returned to the humongous dining room. The castle could house the entire population of New Haven easily, and I wondered if it would be wise to move in as quickly as possible. It was something I would have to discuss with my trusted advisors, so I sent a runner to fetch Miss Maggie, Dr. Kriya, Shelley, Kai, and Ida. Once everyone was assembled around the large dining room table, some squirrel women began to bring us drinks, and I marveled at the speed and efficiency with which Miss Maggie had taken over the kitchen's resources. "Thanks for coming," I nodded to each of the table's occupants individually, and then I cleared my throat. "The Queen of Clovers has escaped." I waited for the commotion that followed my words to die down, and then I continued. "She went through a door at the end of the King's Road," I frowned. ZD mentioned the wall was little more than a myth, but it's real. And it's the only thing standing between us and the Queen of Clovers. There was a diamond shape on the door, but I'm not sure what that means.
The Queen of Diamonds Realm,
May supplied.
Oh, the land is a vast place, Dreamer, and the Dark King's minions have controlled every territory for a long time now. The Queen of Clovers oversaw the last known rebel holdout.
May, I said, as a thought suddenly occurred to me. You've passed through the wall.
Indeed.
The dodo woman puffed on her pipe.
I attached myself to the undercarriage of a slave caravan carriage. They never even saw a whisper of me. The Queen of Speed's territory was already too far gone for me to do anything, so I went in search of more rebels. I'm overjoyed that the Queen of Clovers was less successful in her area.
Okay, so no easy answers there, but we just have to brainstorm some ideas then. I wasn't about to give up when I'd already come so close.
I imagine she was tasked with squashing our little acts of rebellion. I'm quite glad she failed in that regard.
Hear, hear.
So the queen got help from another queen. I scratched the stubble in my jaw as I thought this over. Well, we took down one castle, and we can conquer another. We just have to figure out how to get past the wall first.
I think you've done enough for one day,
Una said, as worry creased her brow.
You are still covered in card blood.
I looked down at my armored body, and the cat girl was right. I was a mess. But it was merely the signs of victory painted on my person, so I was in no hurry to get cleaned up. This had been the fight to end all fights, but I'd learned the real war had only just begun. The Queen of Clovers couldn't hide from me forever, and if the Queen of Diamonds was helping her, well, then she was going down too. The Dreamer had awakened. And the minions of darkness had better goddamn despair.
End of book 2.